And now, the International Vienna for Everyone. And now, the International Vienna for Everyone.
You got an umbrella with you?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, British, I never go anywhere without an umbrella.
True.
Yeah. Cheers.
Thanks for coming here.
Yeah, no worries.
What have you been up to?
Today.
Starting with the day.
Today, this morning. Well, I don't work on Fridays, which is very nice.
You do what?
I don't work on Fridays, which is really nice.
Doing this four-day week?
Yeah, trying to. I have like fully flexible hours, so I'm trying not to work on Fridays, just to implement a bit more of that work-life balance where I can. So I started this morning with a gym session.
A gym session?
Yeah.
You go to the gym?
Yeah, I go to
the gym. About it.
Just go there, work out, yeah.
Been doing it for long?
Yeah, on and off for a long time, since I was like 16.
So you're like, you can't say like you've been going to the gym for 10 years, but in the last 10 years you've been going to the gym.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I have had an on and off love affair with the gym for the last 9 years.
9 years?
Yeah.
So what is the longest period that you've been to the gym without interruption?
Oh, full consistency?
Yeah.
Probably say 1 year.
Oh, that's quite a lot.
Yeah.
More than the average.
Yeah.
People usually do a full month. I'm not going to subscribe for the next month because I have this business trip to do and there's this wedding and then it's not worth it to pay for it for this month. And suddenly it's like 5 years later, I think I might subscribe to the gym again.
Exactly. Yeah. That's always the problem with me as well, because I, you know, living here in Vienna, I disappear for 3 weeks back home in England and then I completely fall out of a routine. Yeah. And then it takes me at least another 2-3 weeks to get back into going consistently again. So,
what else? You went to the gym?
Yeah, I went to the gym. I came home. I reread your magazine again. Yeah, reread it again. Wanted to have it fresh in my mind again.
Okay.
Before this interview. And then I went out into the city and I met, I wish there was a good English word for this. I want to say a colleague, but it's someone I work with, but we don't work together at the same organization. So they're from like a partner company.
Yeah.
And we met for the first time in person and got to know each other. And now I'm here.
Yeah. Cool. And you mentioned you go back to England for like 3 weeks and then you skip gym. What happens in England? You just eat like crazy there and you just relax. Anything else? You go to your parents, right?
Yeah. So
I just cool. For you.
My parents, neither of them are very gifted chefs, I would say. So you can't say I go back home for the cooking. That's not the case. But yeah, I stay with my parents when I go home and I stay with my friends. And most of my friends live in London, but some live up in the north of England as well. So I'm usually just traveling around England trying to see everybody.
Mm.
Yeah.
What part of England are you from?
I'm from near Cambridge, so right in the middle of England.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I grew up in a small town near Cambridge.
What's nice about the area, except the universities?
Well, the area I'm from is really, really flat, so it's quite well known for agriculture. And there's some really beautiful spots to watch the sunset. So this is what I really enjoy. And it's only about 40 minutes in the car from the beach.
Mm-hmm.
So...
what beach is that, the nearest one?
Hunstanton's the nearest one. Uh-huh. It's on the east coast of England.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We always forget that there are nice beaches also in England. Somehow we never relate it to like seaside.
Yeah.
Why is that? It's because of London that doesn't really, it's like the thought by the seaside or?
I would say that the beaches, the nice beaches in England are hard to come by. You kind of have to look for them. And they're not what you would expect from a typical holiday.
Yeah.
So if you go down to the southwest of England, down Cornwall, you've got really stunning beaches there, like clear blue water. But the rest of the water around England is quite muddy and grey. And a lot of seaweed, so it's not as nice as what you would expect in Italy, for example.
Yeah. Growing up like 40 minutes from the seaside, why did you move to Vienna then?
It's too cold there back in England. Yeah. You can't swim in the sea most of the time. Maybe up to a week.
So it's like just you can take a look at it. It's nice to have a coffee and just near there, but inside, indoors.
Yeah.
And sit outside.
Yeah, it's nice. We're going for like long walks along the beach. Yeah. But one of the things I really appreciate about Vienna in comparison to England is you really experience the seasons here.
Mm. You do? I think the opposite. You just have winter and summer.
No.
Like now it's summer and it's not summer.
Yeah.
20 degrees outside and it's been like that for the whole week and it's going to be like that for almost the full upcoming week.
Yeah, yeah.
There's the summer here.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And it's been like that for at least the past three summers that I've been here.
I feel like it's been pretty hot as well, though.
For 1 week.
Yeah.
In July.
Yeah. But no, I've got a tan. I never get a tan in England. So like this is great for me to be in Austria and be able to get a tan.
Did you go by the Danube?
Yes.
Or just in the balcony?
Yeah, sometimes on the Danube, sometimes up in like the swimming pools in Vienna, you know, the one up in Grinzing, Krapfenwald, Bad.
No, been there.
Really nice one.
Yeah.
Fully recommend, yeah. A little bit tricky to get to, but beautiful. You see the whole of Vienna from it.
Is it the one you go with the Tram 38?
Yeah.
Just leaves you right in Grinzing?
Yeah.
That's
and then a bus.
Then a bus. Yeah, that's the thing. When it gets to the third public transportation, it's too much.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when you see two on right, I'll exchange just once. But then when you have to exchange two things, getting there.
Exactly, yeah.
Go on the balcony.
Yeah, from like the first district, it'll still take you like 40 minutes to get there. It's quite long.
As if you look it from the map, it's not that far. But then you have to do this long rides around sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's good, public transportation, but sometimes you feel it's not that 100% connected.
Yeah, yeah. I think there could be more trams just to speed it up a bit. Yeah, yeah. But generally, it's not so bad. At least the public transport here is on time. Appreciate that a lot.
On time?
Yeah.
Are they worse in England?
Yeah, yeah.
But public transportation are in your city?
In the town I grew up with, only buses that probably come like once, twice an hour.
Damn.
Yeah, so without a car, it's just impossible really to do anything.
Mm.
But I like that about Vienna, you know, the underground's coming every 4 minutes or so. Yeah. So it's all right.
Well, that's Vienna, which we can compare it to London, also other towns in Austria. The same thing, probably bus coming every hour or half an hour.
Yeah.
Which is the same thing. It makes sense because the population is, there's less people living there. So it would be a waste to just send a bus every 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Town where just 5 people an hour take the bus.
Mm, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in London, it's coming really frequently as well, but the underground's not such a nice experience.
Yeah.
It's quite...
Very crowded.
Yeah, very crowded. It's very, very deep underground, so the air quality is horrible.
True. Yeah. That's what a friend of mine noticed when he came here from London, and I noticed that the underground, the metro here in Vienna, you don't go that deep to enter the metro here in Vienna. It's just like sometimes you can still see the sunlight.
Yeah.
For example, when you take the UZX.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
So then why you moved to Vienna? Because of the public transportation?
No, that's actually not what brought me here. No, I finished my bachelor's and I...
England?
Yeah, in the north of England, up in York. Really old city, actually, in the north of England. And during my bachelor's, I did a year abroad in Germany and I really loved it. And I really wanted to get back to somewhere in the Dach region. And I also had a bit of time pressure because Brexit was happening.
Mm.
So I had a few months to move somewhere, Germany, Austria, or Switzerland, to be able to get that Article 50 visa that would allow me to stay. So I just applied to some places and Vienna was the first place to offer me a job.
But why the Dach region?
Because I had learned German in school and I'd lived in Germany and my German level had got pretty good in Germany. So I wanted to improve that. And also it just felt a bit more safe. I think even now, for me to move to a country without knowing the language at all would be quite stressful. So I'm really in awe of the expats that come here and do that. I think that's so amazing because
I thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
And I feel what you're saying.
Yeah, because that must be hard. And
it's not hard. It's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're going to have some strong willpower to get through it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What happens next? Where was the first job you got here?
Yeah, so the first job I was working with the Ministry of Education, like teaching English in schools. It was through the British Council program. I think that's quite well known. And then I wanted to... Originally, the plan was to go back and do my master's somewhere, but COVID was still very much underway, and I'm not the type of person that likes to study online all the time. That's just not a pleasant experience.
Turn off the camera.
Yeah.
Probably take a nap for half an hour.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I really miss like the social element so much during COVID, like so many other people, of course. So studying online was never really an option for me. So I decided to kind of put a bit more of a focus on my career and get some more work experience. So I started doing an internship. And then that turned into a role, which turned into the launch of a magazine.
Which one?
The Lead. It's a magazine by The Female Factor.
Tell me about it. So you can see everything about it. There's no competition thing. There's no other magazines or podcasts or EDS. It is completely freewheeling.
Okay, great. Yeah, so it's a magazine for the future female leaders. And it covers content from upskilling to finding a new job, to developing your personal skills as well as your career skills. So it's all encompassing as well. It's aimed towards female audience, but we made the content so that it's useful for everyone and also regardless of what stage they are at their career. So,
did you make all of the content? Like, what was your role in the magazine?
So I was the editor in chief. fancy title. and particularly me and a colleague of mine that was the creative director, we worked very, very closely creating a lot of the content, but not all of it.
Well, she's from the ones that I know already from The Female Factor.
No, I don't think you met her. No, her name is Nat.
Yeah, no, I haven't met.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't think you have either. And we also designed the layout as well and picked a whole color scheme and really created the brand for the magazine as well together. But we worked with partners as well that also contributed to articles and guest authors. And also we did a bunch of interviews with current leaders in the private sector. So we got a lot of great input.
But it's quite lengthy. You said 100 and something pages, right?
Yeah, 112.
How long did it take you?
I originally pitched the idea to the CEO, one of the CEOs, there's two co-CEOs, back in, I think, December 2021.
Oh, so they didn't have a magazine. You were the one to also
pitch
the idea?
I'm not going to take credit for the idea, but the CEO said to me that she always loved having like the idea of having a magazine, but she never had the capacity to really do it. So she was like, if you want to stay on after your internship and work on this magazine, like that would be amazing. And I was like, I'm in love with this idea. Like, I have to do it. Yeah.
What fascinates you about the magazine? Like, it's because it's print, old-fashioned.
Yeah, I think, print as well, because I'm always a book over Kindle type of person anyway. So it's controversial.
We'll
not great when you're an expat and you have to lug three boxes of books around with you from country to country or apartment to apartment. Sure. Yeah. I really appreciate the print. And also just having all of these resources in one place for people to read as well, because navigating your career, particularly in an early stage, can be really, really daunting. You don't know where to start or, what to even focus on first. Yeah. So just having everything within the magazine sort of creating a mode roadmap for where people could go within their career, and providing advice and insights, and also just creating all of these insights from other people who know way, way more than I do or any of us did about a certain topic, and being able to put it in one place and actually give that to people.
But did you edit also texts and content, articles, or at what degree was your editing accountability, let's say?
So I edited every article that was in there. And I can't say the exact number of articles, but I would want to say we, between us two, we probably wrote about 70% of it ourselves as well, taking insights from other people.
So you also write?
Yes, yes, I do. Enjoy.
What do you write, except articles? Or what articles do you write?
I wrote a lot on expat-related content. So way back when, I published an article on the top 10 expat-friendly employers in Austria, and did a whole investigation into employers in Austria. And
was it published?
Yeah.
Where?
Online and the Femo Factor website. Yeah. Yeah. Can send you the link as well.
I read that.
You did?
So that either Tanya or what's it, the other, the name of Mahdi?
Mardis.
Mardis, yeah. I think I saw them publishing it once. It's not too long ago, right?
Like, yeah, maybe
the recent year.
Yeah, like a year ago now, probably.
I've seen it.
Yeah. Oh, I hope so. Yeah.
But I haven't read it, so I'd like to read it.
Yeah, please do. Yeah. It got quite a lot of attention within Vienna. Yeah. Particularly from companies as well, when they were featured and also when they weren't featured as well. They wanted to know why they weren't included, because I really did thorough investigation into them as well and wanted to make sure that they actually were expat friendly. So no one was just going in because their company language was English. That wasn't enough.
True.
Yeah.
What else do you write? Now that you mentioned books and writing, we're going to talk about it, all right?
Yeah.
What is your writing process like? What are you writing right now?
Right now, I'm not really writing too much. After the magazine, I really needed a break from all of this because I had to, you know, have so much output that kind of killed a little bit of a love for it. But I hope to get back into it into the future. Yeah.
And what would you like to write?
Yeah, more things related to expat content.
So articles.
Yeah.
No books.
Articles.
No, I think literature, like, novels.
I would never write fiction. I don't.
Why? Never? Why?
I don't think
You're
so.
You're too young to say never.
Yeah, probably. Probably too young. If I retire quite early, then maybe I'd take a turn that way. But no, I enjoy writing like nonfiction, writing about experiences and things like that.
What is your writing process like when you have to write something? How do you start, or where do you start?
So
let's say with the article that you wrote about the 10 companies.
Yeah.
How was it?
Yeah, that, I think that's the longest amount of time I ever put in one article, because I really wanted to be thorough with it. So I went quite into like an investigative journalist mode, and I posted in loads of expat Facebook groups and asked a load of my expat friends, like, what companies have you worked for? What would you recommend? Tell me about them. And I started by creating a list of criteria of what I would regard as expat-friendly company. And I started, then I narrowed this down to 5 key things, and that was what I was going to measure all of the companies against. And so then after that, and I started getting recommendations, and then I was doing my own research into the companies, it kind of like just wrote itself after that.
But like, technically, for example, you write early in the morning, or like to write evenings?
I'm an early bird, so I like to write in the morning. Yeah.
How early?
I usually start work about 7:30. Yeah.
So you just wake up early, at breakfast, take your coffee.
Yeah.
You work from home, or you prefer going in a coffee shop? Public library.
Yeah, when we were doing the magazine, really liked working with my colleague in coffee shops. That was super fun. I don't do my best work from home. I like to be in a different space. So sometimes I would go to the office. Yeah.
So you can write in groups?
Yeah. We actually, during the part of the magazine phase, we would do these things where we'd set a timer for 15 minutes. we would write like 15 minutes on one article and then we would swap. And the other person would then write 15 minutes on that article. And then sometimes it was done within that time and then it just had to be edited. But the core body of what you wanted to discuss. Yeah.
I never thought these things work.
Yeah, we really just set a time for 15 minutes, was super strict, wrote what we could or just put down some ideas for sentences and created a bit of a structure. And then the other person would go in, read it, and then just add.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But would that take a lot of time to read what the other person just
so anything
wrote?
That was
and
in
then
the magazine that doesn't
like
have an author listed
to
next to it, and that was written by myself and the creative director. And
there is a sort of a writer's club here in Vienna that does the same thing. I think Sunday, you know about that?
No, I don't know.
There's a
writer's clubs.
They gather on Sundays, and I think it's Sunday Writer's Cafe, something like this. It's a meetup group.
Okay.
And I joined it once, but I didn't feel comfortable writing in groups and being like dictated, just read this for the next 10 minutes.
Okay.
And feel comfortable about that. Maybe they changed things recently.
Yeah.
But since you like this discipline, let's say, maybe you can check that out.
Yeah, no, that does sound
good. They were a very nice group, very nice people, but I just didn't feel comfortable.
But do they give you prompts? Is they tell
they
you things to write about, or are you writing someone else's?
They give you a topic.
Okay.
And then at the end of the meeting, you read it and you get feedback from the others.
Okay.
So, but by writing like style, in sense, or how I write, I would rather not ask for feedback right after I write it.
Yeah.
Because I believe that first I have to leave it there and go back there next day and read it myself first, because I know 100% I'm going to change things. So first feedback comes always within me as a writer. And I know the first draft is always shit. So then it seems a bit too early to just hand it. And sometimes there are emotional topics which you are completely sure that you don't want to share it for feedback as it is, like as a first draft. So that was me.
Yeah.
But since you're saying that you have sort of write in groups before, in teams, and with these time limits, maybe you can try that. Maybe something good comes out. And maybe they write fiction, by the way.
They write fiction?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about that.
But you can just change, if you change the names of the story, it's automatically fiction. Just change the person's name, character's name, and it's fiction.
Yeah, true,
so
actually.
So you can write whatever true story you want.
Yeah, and they say as well, fiction is actually never, well, rarely true fiction. It's always based on some experience.
Exactly.
Some scene within it has some truth to it, you know, based on the author's experience.
So you just add some things to fill out the pages or to make it a bit nicer sometimes and to turn it into literature, but the story is true. There is a say, I forgot about how it is, and it was so basic in the sense that people... it's funny how people tend to not trust fiction, but on the other hand, fiction, it might be so real sometimes.
Yeah.
So it allows you to tell the truth, whatever truth you want, and it could be also illegal truths, and you can just tell it, and no one will ever believe it, and it's cool. No one knows that it was true, so you just write it, and you publish it, or you make a movie out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, until they come around and start trying to sue you because you've included something.
But how about reading then? Do you read fiction or you also read non-fiction?
Yeah, I predominantly read non-fiction. But I will say I read fiction a lot faster than I read non-fiction. So,
what are you reading these days?
At the minute?
When you're not at the gym.
I'm not at the gym that often. It's a struggle. I'm actually reading about Nietzsche. At the minute, the philosopher. I studied politics, and actually he was one of the few political philosophers that I didn't read that much on, so I'm just trying to learn a bit more about him.
Hey, what's the name of the book?
It's called A Very Short Introduction to Nietzsche.
How short is it?
I think it's only about 130 pages.
That's not very short for a man. Who wrote it?
Well, I couldn't tell you. I did. No, it's not in my bag either.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what about when you read fiction, for example? What is the latest fiction book that you read?
The last one I read was by Sally Rooney.
Uh-huh.
She wrote Normal People, but that's not the one I read.
It's the one that is also a series?
Yeah.
If you watch the series with Paul Mascari?
Yeah.
You watched the series?
Yeah.
After everything, the book?
Yeah, I held off. Yeah, I didn't actually know her that well. I hadn't read any of her until the series came out, and then I was like, I'll read the book and then watch it.
What do you think about the series?
I thought it was really, really nice.
You read the book as well, so it matches the book or no?
Yeah, I can't remember now because it's quite old. But yeah, I think it followed the book pretty well.
Mm.
Yeah.
But in general, you like the series as well, right?
Yeah, yeah, I enjoy the series. Have you seen it?
I saw the first three episodes once. Okay. I wanted to watch it more, but somehow I got busy and I just quit watching things in general.
Yeah.
I might go back to it and finish.
Yeah.
But it did leave me with a emptiness feeling.
Mm.
Sometimes it felt too dry. Sometimes it felt unreal.
Mm-hmm.
Like unrealistic with things that might not happen. But on the other hand, I didn't grow up in a British culture, so I don't really know what might happen and what might not happen there.
Mm. Yeah.
So you can tell me more about it if in the realistic sense, if it's...
Yeah, I think...
If it's feet on the ground or no.
I think it's quite a frustrating love story because it just...
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the feeling, yes.
Yeah, it never seems to work out even though
exactly.
When you think in that moment.
Yeah.
If you just had an honest conversation, then it would be so much better.
Yeah.
But I think it's nice as well because it presents an alternative to, you know, these cliche love stories where they start, they fall out, and then at the end, they end up together.
No, totally. It's not a mainstream, I agree, it's not a mainstream series or a love story at all. And this throws the theories, for example... It's all about, it's not about the story in a sense, it's how you tell the story. Because I'm sure when someone pitched the movie or when she, Sally Rooney, when she pitched the book to the publisher or something, if she told him or her like it's a love story, then she'd probably get rejected. Oh, not a love story.
Yeah.
But then when you look at it and probably when you read it, you see that it's all about how they tell the story. It's not just the story itself. If you do like a elevator pitch about that story, it's like the couple that never works it out within themselves. They love each other, but they can't stay together. Mm-hmm. It's so common.
Yeah.
Like it's been there for 500 years. Shakespeare started it and it's been going on for 500 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But then you, at least me, I watched the movie, I watched the series, and it does look very different the way it's told.
Yeah.
It's simple, and I guess that's what a lot of movies and books and series miss these days. They are not simple anymore.
Yeah.
Tend to complicate some stuff.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But this was before, his last name is Mascal, right?
Yeah.
Mascal?
Yeah, Mascal, yeah.
He's Scottish originally?
I think he's actually Irish.
He's Irish?
I think so, don't quote me on it, but I think he's Irish, yeah.
He did this very good movie last year, After Sun.
Yeah.
I don't know if you watched it, what do you think about it?
I think it was really, really good.
Yeah?
Yeah, I really love these types of movies where you have to really read into it and interpret, you know, what they're going through because they use such clever camera angles to capture different things. And even at the end, you know, when he goes back into the dark room and you realize that's him battling with his depression and stuff. It's stuff like that, but it's not always that obvious. But
we just spoiled it, by the way.
Oh, sorry.
No.
Sorry.
Don't worry.
Oh, yeah, I literally said the whole ending. But I love like films that you have to read a little bit into and that they leave open questions because I like as well to hear different opinions on it as well and what each person took away from it.
Yeah.
So I really liked it.
It's also it's included in the simple movies and the director, I forgot her name. Never mind. And it was her first feature film. She only done like a couple of short films before that.
Mm-hmm.
And she suddenly get BAFTAs and win awards and goes to the Oscars. And Paul Mescal was also nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just a nomination, it was alongside Brendan Fraser, Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
And the guy is very young.
Yeah.
And suddenly from 2000, I think that his major debut was with the Normal People, that he started to get some fame.
Yeah, that was the first thing I saw him in.
2 years later, he's sitting next to these big, big names, yeah, nominated in the Oscars.
Yeah.
So such a career. Yeah. So young.
Crazy, yeah. He's going to have a really good career, I think.
Yeah. It's nice how she tells the story of it. And it's also, again, to the fact that it's just a week on vacation with her dad. And nothing really happens. If you pitch it, nothing really happens.
Yeah.
It's the daughter trying to connect with her father. That's the thing. That's the one-liner.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are those episodes when, especially, there's a under pressure moment. You know, there's a song that plays Under Pressure. I think there's a moment there where she's trying, her dad is telling her, let's dance, Sophie. I watched that scene many, many times. That's why I remember dialogue as well. And she says, I don't dance. And then she starts mixing the scenes with herself as a grown-up, like an adult Sophie.
Yeah.
And there just starts this gray and black and white lights again going on and off.
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic movie.
Yeah, it's really good.
That was the first movie review that I got published, was this one.
Okay, yeah.
I liked it that much that I wrote it, and I asked for it to be published in Bohemo magazine, if you know about it. There's a Slovenian culture magazine.
Yeah.
That they write movie reviews, theater reviews, and like event reviews.
Yeah. Okay, I didn't know it before, but that sounds really interesting.
Cool,
yeah.
Cool. Yeah. If you have something, I can connect you to the guys and girls.
Yeah, I need to get back into watching more movies. I'm looking forward to when the Viennale comes back again this year.
Were you there last year?
Yeah, last year I think I only managed to watch one or two movies.
Which one?
What's that called again? It's the one, it's based in Austria, and it's about...
The two soldiers?
Yeah, two soldiers falling in love from the army.
I forget about the name.
What is that called?
So this was this young guy who directed it. And it was a new title. I never heard the name of the title, something like this. But it was, what you were saying, what was it about?
Yeah, it's on the tip of my tongue as well, but I can't remember. But it's based in Austria, and it's based on a true story as well. But I think it was actually produced by a German company.
Yeah.
And it's about a young recruit or something joins the army here in Austria and falls in love with one of the sergeants. And they have a relationship, and... Yeah, it's also deals with, you know...
What area? What time period?
I'm not sure.
Like it's nowadays or
recent times? Yeah. Though, yeah, I would say maybe in the last 30 years or something. It was, yeah, maybe even the last 20, based on the last 20 years.
What was the other movie you watched?
I don't know. I can't remember. I'm not 100% sure if I did.
You watched Oppenheimer already?
No, I haven't. But I did watch the Barbie one.
You watched the Barbie first?
Yeah.
How was it?
It's really...
I would say
really
no spoilers, but whatever.
Yeah, it was really fun. Yeah, it deals with feminist issues in a fun way.
Yeah. Did you dress in pink to watch it?
No, I absolutely did not get the dress code memo for it at all. I turned up to the cinema, I think, wearing all black. And everyone was wearing pink. And I was like, oh, did not get the memo.
You mentioned it was a feminist movie. And you also worked with a female factor.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a feminist? I mean, is every woman automatically a feminist?
No, not every woman is automatically a feminist, but yeah, I would regard myself as a feminist. I think everybody should be a feminist.
Why?
Because...
And how would you define it? Like, what should people do to become feminists?
Feminism, for me, is purely women have the same equal rights as a man in society. Mm-hmm. Nothing more, nothing less, just... basics, equal rights.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what feminism is to me. And so my work with the female factor, although they're they don't regard themselves as a feminist organization. They are.
They don't?
No, they don't outwardly say, you know, we're completely feminist, but, you know, their mission and vision is to get to close the gender leadership gap. Mm. So that obviously has things to do with feminism. So my work there is like feminism within the corporate world and within a career. So I think that, you know, women should get treated equally in the workplace. I think workplaces need to be more family friendly to accommodate for the point we are at in regards to traditional roles, you know, how more women take up more housework and more childcare within the family. So we, although that should also become equal, the current workplace standard doesn't always allow for that. So I think we have to work with the situation we're in now, and the workplace needs to get more family friendly policies to account for that.
So to become a feminist, so I believe that women should have the same rights as men. Am I a feminist?
Yes, I would say you are a feminist.
Okay, but that's it? I should only think that?
Yeah, I mean, an actual feminist, I mean, that's the same as like an armchair philosopher, you know, they think their theories, but they don't actually do anything to put them into practice.
That's Marx who said that philosophers just think of how to change the world, but they don't do it sometimes because they don't remember the actual phrase.
Yeah, or don't actually live by their practices, you know. So if we take Marx as an example, maybe he's contributing to capitalism every day and all the things he buys or something. That would make him a real armchair philosophist. So I think being like an armchair feminist would to say you believe in equal rights, but to not actually show up for them. Yeah.
So that's it. From tomorrow, I want to do something to improve the women's rights. Where do I start? Go to my workplace, I raise awareness.
Yeah, it can start by just by being like an ally to women in all regards of life. So in the workplace, for example, if you see a colleague speaking to a woman the way that you know they wouldn't speak to a man, for example, like, could you go get me a coffee? Even though, you know, that's not the woman's job or role to do things like that. Then you could be like, you know, you could get the coffee yourself, or why don't you ask the person whose actual job it is to get coffee to do that, rather than the woman?
Well, good thing the place I work with, it's very, very strict about this, so we appreciate women's rights a lot, but I wasn't talking really about my workplace.
Yeah.
But there are job positions, for example, let's take job positions, so they just have a salary that is for the job position. It's not either if you're a man or a woman. So what's the problem there? Why I never saw like job positions saying that if you're a man you'll get paid more, or that actually happened in a job interview that it was suggested that he can get paid more just because he's a man.
Yeah.
Like, well, can you define this? Because I'm really confused about this part. Like,
yeah, the problem there that we've found through our work is that often women just aren't that confident to ask for as much money as men are. So men, first of all, are probably asking for more, and then they're more likely to get more.
So it's not equal rights problem, it's women's problem.
It's also a problem because workplaces, if they want to, you know, regulate this, then they should have bans for each of their employees. So you say, okay, you're in that position, then you only earn between, you know, like 50 to 55,000, for example. There's things like that that can curb it.
But you were saying something else. Like, we started from a job interview and you said that women don't ask as much as men ask.
Yeah.
Why is that? And how can we fix that? It's about improving women's confidence, which I see, I understand it's one of the missions of the Female Factors as well, right?
Yeah.
To help them become better in the workplace and leadership.
Yeah.
To ask for more.
Yeah, yeah. That's in part as well, is to empower women and to make them more confident. And so when they go into these salary negotiations, they ask for what they really want and what they deserve. Yeah, and it's also a part about like salary transparency within the company. I think, to be honest, a lot of the onus needs to be on the company if they really care about it and they want to be an equal employer. Then the onus is on them to be transparent about what people earn, or at least put it into bands. So if you don't want to say the exact figure that people earn, then you say, okay, this person earns between this and this. But in regards to what women do, then yeah, we also need to empower women to be a bit more braver.
Is when you say equal rights, is it the same thing as gender equality?
Yeah.
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 So you believe that it could be a gender equality, like women and men can be equal 100% in everything?
I would like to say so.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And nothing to add to that. You don't believe that there are jobs that only men can do, and vice versa.
No, I don't believe there's anything like a man
so I
can do that a woman couldn't do as well.
There are no things.
No.
Okay.
Do you think there's some things?
Physically, yes.
Like what?
Like, let's say the average man might be, this is not a statistic, but let's say that the average man, if we take the same age or same generation with another woman, it's physically stronger than the other one and can do more jobs related to physical strength.
Okay, but
on as well as
any job that's physically demanding a woman couldn't do. Maybe,
for example, I've never seen a man, a woman deliver big postage parcels.
Okay, yeah. There's some things with like genetics where men have an advantage there just because they can lift more.
I'm not suggesting, I'm only asking.
Yeah. But I like women could lift like heavy packages as well. I think it's also a matter of just like strength too, because I'm sure there's like maybe some men out there who can't lift that much. Maybe they don't go to the gym.
Yeah, that's why I define like average men and women, same age.
Yeah.
Not trained.
Yeah, if you was to like do like a survey or something, probably the average man can lift heavier boxes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you know, there's like things to help with that.
Do you know many women who would be fine with those type of jobs?
I guess. I don't think it.
Have you ever met one? They say, I don't care. I just start in construction tomorrow. I just want to get a job and pay the bills for my family.
Go for it. Go for it.
Of course, I would also say go for it. But have you ever met one?
The works in construction.
Or delivering heavy parcels.
I think I actually know many people that work in construction anyway, particularly in Vienna. Like,
have you ever seen women working in construction areas in Vienna?
In Vienna? No.
In England? I don't know. I just
said, in England I've seen them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what's the like the proportion of women and men there?
Yeah, there's definitely more men within these.
And would you like to encourage women to apply for more construction work jobs?
For me, it's not about having equality, you know, in everything. It's not like, it doesn't have to be forced, you know. It doesn't have to be 50-50 women and men on the construction site.
So
that's not what I mean. You know, everyone has their
exactly. Own that was free my will. First question. If women's rights, it's the same thing as gender equality, because equality is not justice.
No, not always, because sometimes justice requires going back and rectifying things actively.
Yes.
But within fields where women want to be, then there should generally be an incentive to make it equal. So for example, in like the sea level, there's women there that want to be in the sea level.
So it'd be like the leadership level?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like the CEOs, the COOs, yeah. One of those. If women don't want to go work on the construction site, then sure, they don't have to do it. But also, but what I mean by that is that the employer of the construction site shouldn't then say, you know, we're not going to give any women a try because they're not as strong as men. If women apply, then they should be treated fairly in
Definitely.
The process. Yeah.
But I wonder if they apply.
Could it tell you?
Yeah. Because if a woman goes to the gym, let's say, she has more chances to become an influencer. If she works out well, men think to either become a bodyguard or work in construction. Is that a stereotype or?
I think that is, yeah, a bit of a stereotype, yeah. A lot of people go to the gym and then just go to the office all day. That's also one of the reasons I go to the gym is because I work from a laptop. So I will sit for 9 hours a day.
There is a conspiracy theory about why, do you agree that there's suddenly in the last 5 to 10 years, like a much bigger awareness towards women's rights, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're not that old, but we can sort of feel, and also looking back at what was published some years ago, they weren't talking much about this. I think there was a nice wave in the 60s, 70s about women's rights. They crushed it.
Yeah.
And then it seems like has come back in the recent 10 years or so.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a conspiracy theory why, and which is about that it is on purpose because there's actually, in capitalism, there's actually more profit. First, also if women work and get paid more because they pay more taxes.
Yeah.
And second, if women work and don't stay home raising their kids will go to kindergarten earlier and then spend more time in school. And, you know, these after classes, they don't come straight home. And then this leads to very uniform education for the upcoming generations.
Okay. Yeah.
So the second one makes a lot more sense than the first one with the taxes, because I don't think they are doing so bad with money.
Yeah, yeah. But also, like, back, if you look back to, like, the 50s and 60s, most women, at least once they got married, didn't work anymore.
They didn't work anymore. Yeah, that's a typical America in the 60s.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So you think of all of those women that were contributing towards the economy through their taxes now aren't doing, or them weren't doing so anymore. So if you compare that to now, that is a big increase for the economic.
But my question was, why do you think there's suddenly this manifestation of empowering women that hasn't been there for a long time and suddenly just started? And it's everywhere.
I think it has always been there. I think it's just been slow and it's been like one thing at a time. So it's always, you know, I always trace it back to like the suffragette movement. That's at least when I first started learning a lot about women's rights. And the suffragette movement was, I want to say it was global, but I'll just take the UK for example now.
I don't know about it, so it means that it wasn't that global.
Yeah. The like suffragettes and suffragists basically advocating for women's rights, and they started with the right for women to vote. And the suffragettes were a bit more aggressive with it, and so would implement tactics to get a lot of attention. And you know, there's this famous case of one suffragette pinning a badge to the king's horse or something at the race ground in the UK, and she got killed by this horse because it actually ran over. Yeah, yeah.
You always had a queen. What's the complaint?
Oh no, we're talking before the queen. Yeah, way back. Oh. Yeah. Yeah, the king's horse, yeah. So doing all these very bold things to get a lot of attention and push their agenda of wanting having women to have the right to vote. And there was the suffragists who did it more in like the traditional activist way, so would hand out leaflets and have conversations about it and things like that. Yeah.
But it might be also that in the last 10 years, internet and social media got so wild.
Yeah.
Which helped spread the word much faster and in much better quality.
True. Yeah. But also means the rise of a lot of fake news too.
True.
Yeah.
But it definitely, I would say, I personally think that social media definitely changed the world.
Yeah.
Better than internet, because you need internet itself. It's more like an evolution of first means of telecommunication. It's sort of evolution of the telephone.
Mm-hmm.
It got better. It's like television is the evolution of radio. So they started bringing visual waves to the device, not just sound waves.
Mm-hmm.
But what was completely new was social media and the way it existed. That's also sort of a revolution because it was high five before.
Mm-hmm.
Things like, do you remember those?
Nope.
No.
What's that?
You're not that younger than me, but it was chat. People used to create profile.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that you post things. You just had a profile with your bio there and people would just write you. It was more like a flirting chat.
Okay.
It wasn't so much as regular communication or posting or spreading news. You didn't spread anything. There was no wall, no news feed.
Okay.
Nothing.
Did you have like a status that you could update at least?
Yes, yes. But it just basically would add not friends, connections. I don't know how it was called back then by the picture. You could also text people without having being friends with them. Because that's, I think, what Facebook introduced, becoming friends.
Yeah.
And then the wall, posting things, making things public, and there's a feed. So that's where everything changed. And it offered people a platform where they can express themselves for free 24/7.
Mm.
Would you agree that's the best thing in the world? I don't know.
With the development of social media?
Mm. Yeah, like the freedom of speech for everyone.
Yeah, I don't know if the good outweighs the bad. I kind of think it doesn't.
Hmm.
Particularly in modern times when it's just full of ads. I don't think it's as useful as what it used to be. I think there's definitely some benefits, you know, being able to keep up with friends and having that immediate connection to people. But I also don't know if that was so beneficial or needed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think back to how we were designed, you know, back in evolution, we live together in these small communities. We have a lot of regular social contact with each other. Did we really need to have access to everybody in the world and know what anybody could be doing at any given moment? So I don't know if that's so beneficial for us.
What is your social media mood? Like, are you active? Do you like to publish everything? Or?
Yeah, I would say I'm fairly active.
Let's take it from this. Didn't you publish that you went to the gym today?
No.
No. Okay. No. Did you take a shot of what you eat today?
No.
Do you do that?
Sometimes if the food's really good. Maybe.
If it looks very good, you mean because you're taking a picture of it?
Yeah, if it looks really good.
Even if it doesn't taste good, if it looks good, it's worth sharing.
Yeah, if it tastes good, it has to taste good if I share it.
Because
I don't want people to think I'm recommending that place.
Right.
I don't think.
So you take a picture, you eat, and then if it's good, you share the story. You don't just publish a story before trying the food.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, don't do that. No. So, I mean, what I tend to do is do like on Instagram, I have a private account, so not everyone can see it. And I like it just so that people I know follow me. And I will just do like a dump and share like 10 photos of what I've done recently. That's
okay.
What I like.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Like an album.
Yeah. Yeah. I use it as like my personal scrapbook. So if you scroll all the way down, you have photos on there from when I first got my account when I was like 14. So.
14?
Yeah.
That's
it's like a timeline of my life. I quite like that.
You like that?
Yeah.
Your file that is public, right?
It's not public. It's private.
Well, it's public to a certain degree anyway. A lot of people can see it, but you're saying that you have limited followers in the sense that you only keep people that you know, right?
Yeah. So like accept the follower request.
So it's anyway if you meet those people and you show them the physical album. No.
Yeah.
Not much of a difference.
No. But I don't mind. Whatever I've put on there, I don't mind people seeing. I mean, I wouldn't mind if it was public as well. I wouldn't put anything on my Instagram that I wouldn't want to find on the internet, you know, about me or whatever.
You use TikTok as well?
Not really, no. Just for watching sometimes, but also don't really like it because it's really addictive.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I wonder why they want to ban it. But what do you mean addictive? You just keep watching videos and you can't stop? Or addictive that you want to post videos?
No, addictive that you watch people. Watch videos. Because it's just a continuous loop. You know, it never ends.
But isn't it full of stupid videos? I don't have a TikTok account. I just follow a YouTuber who makes fun of TikTokers.
Okay.
And he actually picks some very, very, very stupid people who make TikToks. Like, they make stupid things. And I saw that there's a new trend. I think it's on TikTok.
Right.
That people make money, TikTokers make money. They show themselves in front of the camera. They are live, right? And people can press buttons. And the TikToker reacts to the emoji that the viewer just pressed. For example, it was crazy. I didn't know if I wanted to cry or vomit or laugh. But people were sending ice cream emojis and the girl was faking like she was licking them, like and people just kept sending ice creams. I'll show you the video later. And she would continuously do this for hours. And she was getting paid for this because the emojis were paid emojis. You know, people would pay to send them to her and just to look at her doing to the ice cream emojis. So then someone would send like a burger. And she faked like she was eating the burger. And someone said, I wonder what happens if people send other stuff there. At what level will she keep faking like she's practicing what she just received?
Oh, that's so fun. Yeah, that's so
Have you seen this?
No, I've not seen it at all. No, that doesn't come up.
This is very disturbing. It's not... I mean, I laugh.
As well, like, if she's getting paid for that, like... I kind of respect it as well.
Why? But just because she's being paid for that?
Yeah, because she's been able to monetize that. It's literally...
But you'll watch it. I'll show it to you.
Like, that requires no effort at all. And she gets paid for that. I wonder how much she's charging per emoji.
Well, there are a lot of jobs that require no effort at all. But they're not fine to be paid for.
Yeah, but think if she gets a big enough audience and she goes and does that for like 10 minutes a day... And like 1,000 people send these emojis and she charges like a euro per emoji.
No, that was the news. The girl made like $3,500 in 1 hour.
Exactly. That's like.
But that's all just because she's making good money. I got to respect that. Fuck that. It's that she's ruining her lifetime reputation. She's never going to change her lifestyle after them. It's all there. It's published.
That's something that would ruin your reputation, though. Like, she could delete that video and maybe it crops up again in the future, but there's nothing really offensive about that, is there?
Not about the viewer, but the person who is doing that. Oh my God, that was terrible.
I mean, yeah, it looks a bit silly, and maybe like in a year or two, she's probably embarrassed. Maybe she's not.
Or I don't know. She'll end up somewhere else. Who knows?
Yeah, she earns like a month or two's salary in like an hour.
That's the thing with social media. People are doing everything just for the money.
Yeah, and it's also... There's
more values.
Yeah, what you got to be careful for with like review videos and stuff because most of the time they're sponsored and they're getting paid to say something positive.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I will say that TikTok does have one of the best algorithms out there.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so it will learn the types of videos you like and just keep showing you them because that's how they keep you on the app and that's how they make money.
That's why you don't want to stay there.
Yeah.
What is, do you ever find yourself like you ended up watching stuff you don't know you chose to watch, just algorithm keeps working?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, I often get like stuck in a bit of a loop of recipe videos.
You like to cook?
Yeah, sometimes. I go through phases with it.
You got what?
I go through phases. But yeah.
So what is your favorite food?
Like a meal, or can I pick one food?
Whatever you
want. Food item. Okay. I'd say my favorite food is strawberries, but my favorite, and it's always strawberries, but my favorite meal changes all the time, but at the minute it's moussaka. Yeah. No. With any kind of dip. So
you know how to do it?
Yeah.
You do it yourself?
Damn,
I should try that. Next time, bring it over.
I will. Actually, yeah, I bought the ingredients again today, this morning, to make it again. I've made it like every week for the past like 4 weeks, so I'm a bit obsessed with it.
Bring us a big tray here for the whole hub.
Really?
We'll pay you for that. We can do like a night, like a moussaka night.
Yeah, we could. Yeah, a moussaka night. That sounds great. Yeah. Wow. And I'm really in a bit obsessed at the minute with dips. So every week I'm having a different dip with the moussaka. This is my TikTok. It's all just dips to make them.
Damn. Wow, I have such skills here. There is a question I want to ask that I just remembered, and now I want to start asking it to almost every guest.
Okay.
You're the first one to be asked.
Oh,
I heard these questions once in the movie theaters. When I was waiting to get inside, I just got my ticket. There was a crowd with like 5 people that were together, young people. And one of them asked the others with a question, with this question. If you'd pick a movie universe you'd like to be, which one would that be? It doesn't matter if it's fantasy or all-timer.
Oh,
that's a very tough question, but you could choose a couple.
Yeah,
and you can think of your on your feet. You don't have to go to that.
Yeah, that's super hard.
I was thinking when I heard that question, I thought about it for the next 15 minutes and I still didn't realize which one would be the right one. TV series, not just movie.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Harry Potter would always be really cool.
Well, you studied in York, right? That's where Diagon Alley was shot.
Exactly. Yeah. But also, some of my favorite movies are like British rom-coms set in like the 90s. And I would really love
Notting Hill.
Yeah, Notting Hill, exactly.
You'd like to be in the Notting Hill scene?
Yeah, I would really love to have a bookshop.
I would just go and ask, would you like to be Julia Roberts or?
I think I'd like to be Hugh Grant.
Hugh Grant.
Yeah. Yeah, to live in London in the 90s, I bet would be a really fun experience.
But you know what's the fun? We probably know this little fun fact about the Notting Hill film. When they shot the entrance of the bookstore, it's another bookstore.
Yeah.
And then when you enter inside, it's actually the Notting Hill bookstore.
Yeah.
Which is when you go straight through I forgot the name of the main street in Notting Hill. Can you remind me that? That's like Italian name, sort of.
No, I can't remember.
I forgot that. But anyway, there's one that is right on the main street, which is the one that they shut the entrance from the outside.
Yeah.
And there's the bookstore from the inside, which is the most famous area of the in the field where they had the conversation when they first met, which was on the left side. I forgot the name of this street. I used to remember it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I remember. Yeah, because I've been in the bookstore and it feels way smaller than what it looks like on the movie.
Yes.
It's really narrow.
Definitely. So you can even wonder that they just built it in the studio, because where did they place the cameras?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's no room
for them. So you'd like to be the Notting Hill, London in the 90s.
Yeah,
they tell it me. And Harry Potter, right?
Yeah.
You'd like to be a wizard?
Yeah, I feel like going to Hogwarts would be a pretty cool experience.
Yeah, I get the letter.
Yeah, it was every like British kid's dream when they was like 11 that they would get a letter.
Yeah. But it was so real. I also remember when I first read it, I was 11 years old. Also, how the book starts with Harry. And the thing about it is because it switches from a completely real and ordinary world and it turns it into a fantasy world. And as a kid, it makes you believe that, wow, this might really happen to me as well.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
How about your holidays?
What about my holidays?
Are you going anywhere on vacation?
No, actually, no. I think my next trip will be England in October.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, so sadly, no more vacations this summer, but a couple of friends are going to come see me. So that kind of feels like a vacation.
Visiting your parents in October?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And how do they feel when you go? They're like, they can't wait for you, or?
Yeah. They're really cute as well. Yeah, my dad always picks me up from the airport. And in the past, he's held like a sign that says like, Frau Rothwell, and it's super cute. Yeah, but actually, now I go back to dog sit for them whilst they go on holiday.
Oh, they have a dog?
Yeah, they have two.
Dog.
They have a golden retriever.
Golden retriever.
Yeah.
And
a black Labrador.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are they old?
No, the golden retriever, we got her just before Christmas.
Mm.
So she's not even one yet. And the black Labrador is, I think, two. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
We always had golden retrievers and black Labradors growing up. So,
wow.
Yeah, big dog person.
And are you like the only kid?
No, I'm the youngest of four.
Four?
Yeah.
Like, where are they, brothers or sisters?
It's a sister, two brothers, and then me, yeah.
They all live in England?
Yeah.
You're the only one that left?
Yeah, I'm the only one that left, yeah. And they all live like fairly close to where I grew up as well.
Oh, so nice. Your parents are not missing you a lot.
Yeah, they have three other kids that they can see.
And they still call you when they need you to pet the dogs.
Yeah. When they need someone to look after the dogs, the kid that went abroad.
We're around there, but yeah, let's bring Catherine here. She loves dogs.
Yeah. I think they also. It's a way that they can see me more often too, because I always hang around for like an extra week.
Mm.
So